Good evening, everyone. I'm Patrick Casey, sitting in for Henrik Palmgren, and you're listening to Red Ice Radio. Our guests for the show are the hosts of Tales from the Trough. Tales from the Trough is a podcast that consists of a number of skits which use humor to ridicule absurdities found both on the right and the left.
Gentlemen, welcome to Red Ice. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Why don't we start by going around and having each of you briefly introduce yourselves?
All right. I'll go first. I'm National Waifuist. I'm a writer, performer, like the rest of the guys, for the show Tales from the Trough.
Hey, yeah, I'm Rudolf von Flugel. I'm a writer and performer as well. And I do a lot of the music, and sometimes I do the artwork for the show.
I'm Titus Flavius. I'm also a writer and performer.
I'm Vlad, or Vlad the LARPaler. Mostly a voice talent for the show, because these guys are much better writers than I am.
Fair enough. So you're all obviously part of the Tales from the Trough podcast. I have to say, I've listened to a few episodes, and I don't think I've ever heard anything quite like it, particularly not within the context of the dissident right or the alt-right. So I think the first question really should be, how did this podcast come into being?
Well, it actually started off as an entirely different show. Originally, this is all sort of a group production of The Oven Men, which is sort of a forum group on the TRS forum. And we've been thinking about doing a show for a really long time. And originally, we've had, some precursors, of course, Knock Off, the very famous Australian comedy podcast, was an Oven Men production. And there's also our sister podcast, Wang, done by Victor Stamp. And we were trying to come up with something that, something that that everyone can take part in. And originally, the idea was for Wap and myself and Anomalous, who's another member of our group, that we were going to do sort of a parody of a woke leftist podcast. And we were going to break down not just sort of like their talking points, but also sort of like parody their personal lives as well, because we would, cut to commercial, but there wouldn't be any commercials there. And we would sort of build our characters while we believed, or our characters believed, no one was listening. So, but because of the time, the schedules of all of us were, a group of 20 folks spread across four continents, finding a schedule that would work for everyone was really, really hard to do. So we decided on doing what's more or less a variety show, where, each of us, we do our own separate things. Sometimes we collaborate on a story. But most of the time, we're writing a story, we're writing commercials, we're, then voicing those and performing those, recording them, and then we put them all together and into a show.
Do you guys have anything to add to that one, or did Titus do a pretty thorough job of answering it?
Yeah, that's a pretty good rundown. We basically view it as like a sketch comedy show, so at first we weren't really sure what we were going to do, content wise, and if we needed to cross reference ideas with one another so that we didn't, cover the same ground twice. But it's been like a year in and we haven't run into that problem yet. So I don't know if that's just providence or what, but it's working out pretty well.
So how would you describe Tales from the Trough to someone who has never listened to it before?
Well, I mean, obviously, we're referencing Tales from the Crypt. But it's in that niche between horror and comedy, Yeah. And they both kind of exist in the same kind of area of human experience. So the two concepts dovetail quite nicely. But like I said, it's really a sketch comedy show that we try to mainly mock leftists, and the left, because it seems like that's been in their wheelhouse forever, like making fun of the right, and the right just stands there stoically and takes it, or, not stoically, but they take it either way. And, yeah.
We certainly have a feeling, there certainly is a feeling of the show as you listen to it. And if you think of like the, you know, late night sort of like Art Bell, you know, there's certainly an element of that. Who's Dark Place, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, which is a rather excellent, one of the few British television shows that I would highly recommend. There's definitely, you know, an element of that where it's camp, it's purposeful, it's purposefully silly. At the same time, we're doing horror stories.
Tales from the Trough is really funny. Obviously, that's what you guys set out to do, and I think you definitely accomplished that goal. How would you describe the type of humor you all employ in your show?
I would say that it's varied, actually. And I think that's one of the strengths of our show, is that we have so many writers, and we all have a very specific brand of commentary and comedy that's complementary to each other. Guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm probably like the meanest. I have like the sort of the meanest sense of humor.
The mean girl.
I am the mean girl of Tales from the Trough. And I think conversely, like Rudy, I think certainly is the most like lighthearted and like goofy. Or like
absurdist.
Yeah, absurdist. Yeah.
Yeah, I try to keep it you know, kind of wholesome, kind of fun and lighthearted. Because I think, you know, we all, the black pill is ever present. So, but then again, like half of my stories end with the world being taken over by like demon children or like genetically modified corn people. So. But I mean, like Titus is right. We all have our own flavor. And I personally, I try to include a lot of sort of references to the occult and paranormal because I think all of us have really been into all these things our whole lives, you know, and we love horror movies and like campy shows like Are You Afraid of the Dark, you know,
yeah.
Red Goosebumps when we were little, all of those sorts of things. So we, it's really like we're just trying to make heartfelt homages of the stuff that we really like while tying it to relevant topics, you know, and we try to strike a balance between being timely, but also making content that you can listen to like a year later, you know, so, right. And we try not to make it too niche either. Like we definitely reference a lot of things that go on in the news and in the alt-right, you know, but a lot of that is because when we started off, we weren't really sure who was going to listen to our show. Like we were like, is this going to just be like our friends listening to it? Is it going to be our fellow forum members? Like, you know, so...
And I definitely think that just in terms of the differences between sort of contemporary or topical topics and sort of more thematic, you know, elements that we're trying to do, like our commercials usually are like the commercials, the fake commercials that we write and voice for the show, usually are more topical. They're usually about something that's happening, you know, either in the news, yeah, or, you know, movement drama that we're sort of critiquing, you know, through a very quick, you know, 30 seconds or 60 seconds, or sometimes some of our commercials are pretty long, but yeah. They're quick and easy. And they're basically just, you know, us, you know, mocking a very, you know, small topic. And then we sort of move on. And a lot of our stories actually aren't really like politically based. Some of them are, but most of it, you know, we're just sort of working with a theme, and we just sort of flush it out with characters in a story arc and try and make as many jokes as possible.
Now, some might argue that given the fact that our current predicament is quite serious, we should then be serious all the time as well. What do you all make of that?
Absolutely disagree 100%.
Yes.
I think that that's where we have been successful and where I think other, not only podcasts, but movements have failed is because they have no sense of humor whatsoever. And that I think eventually, the predicament that we're in is serious. There's quite a lot of dark things that you can kind of go down the rabbit hole and you can get kind of obsessed with them. And I think with some people in the movement that actually kind of breaks them, they become different people and they kind of develop a, you know, borderline neuroses. Mm-hmm. And I think that having a way to make light of the situation, to be able to kind of poke fun at it. I think that's necessary. I think that's, you know, that's something that's kind of intrinsic, you know, to the human condition. Is that sometimes, you know, no matter how bleak things get, no matter how dark things are, you just got to laugh at it sometimes.
It's the heroic mindset to have in this day and age. And just speaking, you know, just in terms of recent history, you know, the alt-right was at its best when it was being funny and transgressive. And yeah, we were taking things, we were talking about serious topics, but we were doing it in an unserious way. You know, the success that we had during the 2016 election was indicative of that, and sort of the faltering steps and failures subsequent, I believe, are a result of people taking this too seriously. You know, the thing that we have to do, and this is sort of, I think, the thesis statement of the show, is that we need to make fun of these things. We need to, you know, make fun of not only our enemies, but of ourselves, because I think it really is the only way to operate in a postmodern society.
You become antisocial without humor.
Yep.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I think that's, there's this kind of incorrect idea that you can't be both serious and humorous. Like, I don't understand why you can't do both. Because it's almost like people get this mistaken idea that you have to exist as this like stoic lumberjack man in order to do anything real. But humor is a part of a whole personality. Like, everyone except for like the most sociopathic people have senses of humor. So I find it kind of, it just seems kind of weird to try and like actively suppress that. Like, and you know, I mean, you can go too far, you know, like we all knew like the practical joker in school that was just always trying to make a clown of themselves, but like, there's no reason that you can't be serious and funny. And I mean, just because you're known as a funny person doesn't mean that that's like you know, it's not like you're like the Joker
one trick
who like, Yeah, exactly. Like, you're not like damaged and like can't see the society we live in, man. Like, you just have a sense of humor. Like, just roll with it.
It's also like a false ideal. Like, I understand, like, I really do understand the drive for people to, you know, who wake up to the situation that, you know, European peoples are facing. I and viewing just sort of the horrors of modernity and you know, the instinctual drive I think a lot of people face when they see and experience this realization is to, you know, hearken back to sort of like, you know, the past, whether it be like antiquity or you know, pre-war West. And a lot of the things that have survived is that sort of like heroic, you know, standing tall and, you know, doing what's right and, you know, having a, you know, being very, very serious and very, very passionate. And, you know, those are really good drives. And those are really noble drives. But that only works in a healthy society. And we don't live in a healthy society. So if you're acting in a way that is detrimental to, you know, your success in a society, then you're destined to failure. And, you know, you have to understand that the society has been built to poke fun of and mock people who are very earnest and very, very serious. You can look at, you know, the religious right in the United States. You know, they had an enormous amount of power and they failed spectacularly because of late night comedy and they didn't have an answer to it. So we shouldn't make the mistakes of evangelical Christians. We really need to take a different path.
Well, and it's funny, too, that you mentioned that, because you're talking about, like, the pre-war West, and obviously, I think a lot of people, when they first get into this, and the JQ comes up, everyone thinks of Hitler, right? And they think of him as this, like, intense, stoic, super serious figure, but if you actually look into the guy, he was pretty lighthearted and funny, yeah. And, like, during meetings, he would literally sit and doodle, like, caricatures of the people around the table.
Yeah.
Like, it's... I don't know. It's another case of like falling for the false dichotomy.
Yeah, it's actually, if you look at you know, the Third Reich. One of my favorite quotes, actually, about sort of the election of 1933, is this quote by, and actually I'm going to have to find it here, so I'm sorry that I have to. This is actually by Gunter de Alcuin, who was the editor-in-chief of a brown shirt newspaper. And he said, quote, "We scoffed at an entire system and brought it down with resounding laughter." So that's our mission statement. That's what we want to do. And I think that's the proper mindset for people on the dissident right, is that we have to embrace the comedy and the absolute absurdism of our situation.
Yeah. And I mean, it's another place where like right-wing humor and left-wing humor are vastly different, is that the left, they mock everything that's healthy and leads to a strong, stable society. And we make fun of the things that would destroy that.
Yeah.
And sometimes we make fun of other things too, but mea culpa.
What do you all have to say about the role transgression plays in dissident politics?
Yeah, I mean, it's like Titus said, I think the combination of the sort of like malaise that comes with late stage capitalism mixed with access to infinite information on the internet has kind of, it sort of like superheated and just melted all of our pre-existing kind of concepts of what it meant to live in a society. Because I mean, I spend more time talking to people that live hundreds of miles away from me now than I do the people around me, you know. And you may argue, oh, well, you need to build community and this, that, and the other, but sometimes you have to work with what you've got. And a lot of our guys don't have anything around them, you know. So would you have them just sit and be isolated, or would you have them reach out and try and meet like-minded people? And who's to say where this might lead, you know? I mean, we're in totally uncharted territory.
Definitely. Well, my position on transgression is that a certain amount is understandable, but if you start building a subculture that perhaps is too transgressive, then you might attract people who are solely interested in being transgressive, and quite often those people are poorly adjusted, to say the least.
Yeah, it's certainly, I don't transgression as a principle, I use it, I view it as a means to an end. It's a tool. And a tool is best used by someone who is expert, expert in its use.
Someone qualified to wield it. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So there's certainly, and again, it's impossible. You know, it's this being a largely online community. It's impossible to have set criteria of hey, who can be transgressive and who can't. It's impossible to do that, but. We're trying to just sort of lead by example. We're trying to say, hey, you know, if you want to be transgressive, if you want to be funny, if you want to mock the system, this is how you do it.
Well, and also you have to ask yourself, why are you being transgressive? What's the purpose of it? And I'd say that that's one of the things that we try to always think about when we're doing the show is quite a few of our shows, the Twilight Zone or shows like that from, way back in the day, is they have the kind of an underlying message to them, or they at least try to get you to think about something mundane, but in a different way. And I would say that that's, we like to poke fun at things, but at the same time, just kind of like how the left does, we're also trying to kind of put little kernels in your mind to make you think of things that maybe you wouldn't have thought of before. And I'd say that that's pretty, consistent with a lot of our stories.
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, it's really easy to go too far, especially if you get people that are extremely frustrated and who are not really calibrated quite right.
Right.
So it's almost like you have to have come to a lot of these truths yourself in your spare time before you arrive to the dissident right. Or the alt-right, or whatever you want to call it, you know. And it's funny, too, how it's almost like it naturally shakes out. Like, we all built our friend group not based on geographic location, but based on a similar view of things, a similar brand of humor, just a particular outlook, and it happened absolutely naturally, you know. And I think that is part of the reason why we've been able to continue making our content over the course of this past year, and we haven't like faltered or fallen through or had some kind of like petty infighting. Like, we've literally never had any of that because we're actual friends, and we're not doing this for glory or accolades. We're just doing it because it comes naturally to us, and it's frankly, it's very fun and rewarding.
Yeah.
It seems that until recently, the left has excelled at mockery and ridicule. What do you think this has been the case?
I think by nature, conservatism is about, you know, conserving society. So it's about conserving societal norms. It's about conserving, you know, the situation of society. And the left has been, really since its inception, has always been a more active force. Mm-hmm. And you know, comedy is it's a cudgel, right? Comedy is a tool that the left has been able to do to wield with extreme efficacy in you know, using it as a cudgel to beat down sort of the, you know, their opponents, but also sort of the norms of society in which they disagree with. And I think that really is a testament to their success, is that, you know, their constant victories in the culture war. Usually, you know, conservatism, and I'm speaking like, you know, not of people who hold conservative opinions, I'm speaking of the nominal right in America and in the West in general. They're also not made of people who are very funny. You know, if you look at, you know, right-wing comedy, it's Steven Crowder in drag or Glenn Beck, you know, plastering his face with, like...
To be fair, like, Norm Macdonald is pretty funny.
That's true. That's true. But I wouldn't. I would wager that he is right. I think that he has a lot more extreme opinions that he sort of keeps to himself.
Exactly.
I'm also reminded of, I believe it was Turning Point USA that dressed up, one of their college chapters had people dress up as babies, to own the libs by, you know, creating a safe space thing going on, but. Yeah, I mean, that Steven Crowder and drag, really, that's all the evidence you need that the contemporary right is comedically impoverished, for lack of a better.
Well, and I think a big issue too is that, like, who promotes and controls the media? You know, they're not going to, like, if there's a legitimately funny right-wing person, like, say, you know, MDE and Sam Hyde, like, they might give them a shot on accident, but then as soon as they realize their mistake, they just pull the plug, you know? Yeah. And it's also a case of, like, the right traditionally has been more involved with hard sciences and doing things that have definite results. So, like, when you get into comedy, it's simultaneously, like, soft and hard. Like, it exists in this sort of, like, quasi state between the two. And without the proper context and the right level of imagination, you're not going to see what you can actually accomplish with it. You're just going to see it as like a parlor trick or just like a silly like pastime. You don't see it as an actual tool of cultural change, you know. Yeah. Whereas you might be like, well, I'm going to start a plastics corporation, and that is very real, but the average person doesn't know what that is. They don't care about it, and the only thing they can think of, like, the only context they have for that is The Joke and The Graduate, right? So it immediately turns into a joke to millions of people just from one throwaway little bit of jokery.
Yeah. And the right for up until, you know, recent memory, the right has been focused almost exclusively, as Rudy said, like on scientific questions, mainly economic questions. And it's really, really hard to do comedy about, you know, tax incentives and you know, corporate, you know, taxes.
Ethanol subsidies and highly important things that conservatives care about.
Yeah, yeah. No
yeah,
one.
These things are definitely important and real. Like, we're not saying that, but, you know.
As far as, like, you know, a cultural avenue goes, it's a dead end.
Definitely. Do you think that's changed in recent years with the arrival of the alt-right?
I think it started earlier. I think it started with Chan culture. And this is, you know, that's the community in which I grew up in, and a lot of folks on the dissident right sort of grew out of. And that was, it was all humor based. It was all about you know, going back to our previous conversation about the nature of transgression. It was all about, you know, saying something shocking while at the same time adding some sort of comedic twist to it. I think that is definitely changing. And I think it's almost exclusively people who are on the far right who have this comedic edge, because we're able to view the world in a very different light, and also address problems through, you know, something that, you know, nominal right wingers really aren't accustomed to do, which is through scathing criticism and mockery.
Yeah, the left can't do shock anymore because they've gone too far.
Well, that kind of, it's like a popular saying is the left can't meme. Something definitely has changed in the last few years. You know, these people had essentially hegemony over the media empire in the Western world, and with the internet, that just kind of all came crashing down. An example of like how things are changing is like go back and look at news stories in the early 2000s about 4chan and like how terrified they are of it, and how like these people are like the epitome of evil. Just how scared they were of just, you know, essentially just online trolls. I kind of like what Titus was saying, that kind of, I think, just showed a turning point in where our culture was going.
Well, it's kind of funny too, because I feel like a lot of right wingers, like on the outside, they don't have kind of like a humorous disposition, but they actually are pretty funny, you know, amongst themselves or like in their own minds. And so it's like the internet revealed the secret essence of everyone, and the left was revealed as being like horribly neurotic and
very social very socially conscious.
Yeah, very preening, very vain. They hold all of these ideas in such high esteem, and it's like they're floating around in this like crystalline space where even the slightest transgression will cause it to all, you know, crash down and smashing among them. They're very precious. And people on the right can take criticism, and because of that, they can dole it out twice as hard as these other people.
Yeah, I think the left is, I find them less, definitely less funny than the right at this point. And part of that is because when they're trying to, you know, mock and ridicule people on the right, first of all, they generally sound bitter and they sound, they sound kind of upset, right? They don't like seeing someone break away from the, you know, the progressive orthodoxy. And you know, when someone comes off is really bitter and they're trying to insult you, it's really easy to just kind of laugh at them and say, you know, you're clearly upset. And, you know, just kind of keep your cool. Also, the left at this point really has just kind of monopolized on snark, which I think is a very low form of mockery and humor in general.
Well, it's not a joke, right? It's like, it's the premise of snark, right? The premise of John Oliver is him playing a clip and then like looking bemused at the camera and like, you know, turning his head slightly, you know. That's not comedy. That's just like, you know, pardon the language, but you're just being a bitch, right?
Yeah, and it seems like it has the effect of training people to just hear a conservative position or a right-wing position overall and to just laugh at it. That's kind of what I got from, you know, The Daily Show. It's like they'll play a clip of, you know, George Bush saying something that's probably pretty stupid. Mm-hmm. And then you know, Jon Stewart he'll just kind of laugh or make some face, and then there's the laugh track. And that really just, you know, if you've been watching The Daily Show since you were a kid, chances are that's just how you're going to respond to, you know, hearing any right-wing idea. It's like, oh, that's so absurd. That's so fun, you know? And that's what the Chapo Trap House, the kind of the dirtbag left guys really do, is their whole thing is like, they don't debate, right?
Yeah.
They call attention to something that is conservative, something that's right-wing, and then they just make like some snarky comment about it. They're not actually engaging with the facts, right? One example of that would be one of those accounts tweeted something along the lines of modern genetics being, you know, the equivalent of measuring people with calipers. And I mean, first of all, measuring, you know, calipers have scientific uses. The idea that it's like, it's just some totally outdated product of, you know, racist 18th century colonial science is really absurd. But I found that quite telling because it's just a good way of saying like, oh yeah, it's just calipers, bro. It's a good way of writing off all of these modern discoveries in genetics that I find quite fascinating. And unfortunately for the left, actually shatter many of their central myths.
Yeah. Not to cut you off, Rudy, I'm sorry, but I just want to make a real quick point. Like the legacy of John Stewart and the whole sort of snark empire that he built up has crippled like the left's ability to be funny. Like I really do believe that. Like if you're not able to engage in sort of, you know, your opponent's, you know, ideology, you're not able to make fun of it and mock it like coherently. And that really has, like, I think he's had a real deleterious effect on like left-wing humor.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be able to get down in the dirt and really make fun of the things that are closest to the man on the ground, because it's about numbers, basically. It's numbers, and it's getting enough intelligent, high-minded people involved as well. And numbers do convince prestigious people. And shows like The Daily Show, basically, even though they pretend like they're the voice of the people or whatever, they're really just building an ivory tower for themselves where they just go up there. They don't have to respond to real criticisms because they can just like snarkily brush it off. And then they have like infinite laugh tracks to cover up any kind of like concern. And they don't honestly engage. They create an echo chamber and they create a script and they reinforce it constantly. And that's all they do. So when you get approached by one or two, like intelligent people with real, you know, scientifically corroborated facts, you know, you can brush them off. But when you get approached by like 800, 1,000, 10,000 anonymous accounts, like spamming you with these, you know, hate facts, it's a completely different response. And these people just go haywire. They just totally shut down because they've convinced themselves that everyone agrees with them and that they are the bearers of the torch of civilization. And it's just not the fact. They're just high on their own supply, basically.
There's nothing funnier on Twitter than one of our guys going after a comedian and watching the comedian absolutely lose his cool and get mad online. I think I think one of the best examples was the Carlton Autism, shout out to Autism Dog, going after Ricky Gervais and like Gervais got legitimately mad online. To an avatar of a fat dog, like that's the funniest thing in Gervais's entire career. That's just great, you know.
And he was in a Muppet movie.
Yeah, and he was in the Muppet movie. Yeah.
So that's really saying something then. I mean, watching blue check marks just in general engage with these anonymous, you know, shit posting accounts is. So it's really amusing, right? It just seems like it's an endless war of attrition. You know, if you're a blue check mark like Ricky Gervais, then you are representing everything that you've worked for. You're representing your career, your reputation, your brand, and you're just trying to go up against, you know, like Groper Viking 88 or something. It's not. There's like nothing to. Even if you make a few good points, you're. You know, your opponent has literally nothing to lose.
Yeah. Or even worse, like a Groyper of yourself.
Yes. You know?
Like imagine that.
Yeah.
It's really like Jungian undertones there.
You're debating your shadow self.
Yeah, Titus, you used a phrase that I particularly like, and that's mad online. So obviously that refers to someone who becomes visibly upset on the internet. I generally see this phrase being used within the context of Twitter, right? You know, two people are arguing on Twitter and one of them becomes visibly upset. To me, it seems like you really just lose at that point, right? If you're getting into an argument with someone, if you're making fun of them, if you're ridiculing them, you know, the things that we've been talking about, then your goal is to get under their skin. You want to evoke a negative reaction. You want them, you want to to make them upset. You want to make them mad online, right? And it seems to me that these days the left is far easier to send into that kind of anger spiral, right? And I think part of the reason for that is because they are so puritanical and they are so offended when people break the progressive liberal orthodoxy, right? Jim Goad uses the term church ladies to refer to, not just the SJWs, but also, liberals and progressives overall these days. They have a very rigid moral code and they really don't like it when, people break that, right? They're used to hearing discussion on the issues that we're concerned with. They're used to hearing that through a filter. You can't say certain words. You can't broach certain ideas. And overall, you have to engage in dialogue on these issues in a really controlled manner. So would you guys say that the left gets more mad online than the right does? And if so, why would you say that's the case?
Well, they certainly do. And I think the reason why that happens is twofold. I think what you said, in terms of how the left is very dogmatic and they're very puritanical is definitely a point that's valid. I think the second reason why it's so easily to get under their skin is the reason why they're online in the first place. They're online to get social praise and validation for their opinions. And when you don't give that to them, when they say something woke and they're expecting applause and, sassy black girls nodding, right, and instead they get mocked and made fun of, it really just sort of upends their entire worldview. And it's totally, pulls the rug out from under them.
Yes.
And we're not like, I'm not on Twitter social validation. Like, I'm on Twitter to make people laugh. And to have a fun time and to be with, online friends. And I think that's the vast majority of people on right wing Twitter is for that as well. We're just there to stir the pot and fling our little memes. And they're not there for that at all. They're there for social validation. They're there for a community of likes and retweets.
Yeah, and they're basically just spoiled brats.
Yeah.
That's that, because they're used to having their way their entire lives. Most of the women have been coddled and taken care of from, birth onward. And they've been told that whatever they think, no matter how asinine or how detached from reality it is, that it's true and right and correct by virtue of them being female. And the men are barely men anymore. I mean, honestly, they don't strive to engage in any manly endeavor. They don't want to defend anything. They just want to dismantle and give away stuff that's not even theirs to give away. And they're literally physically and mentally weak. They're lesser specimens.
I think also another reason why the left has such a short fuse is they like to make everyone believe that they have a sense of humor because, they can poke fun at fundamentalist Christians and George W. Bush, but when it comes to their own politics, they do not have a sense of humor at all, which kind of goes
around what we were,
it's what we were talking about beforehand about, taking things too seriously. And the left definitely, the fact that you can break a liberal's mind by calling Bruce Jenner by his birth name, I think really speaks to their kind of mental state and how seriously they take their ideology.
I will say that having looked at some of these woke left accounts and paying attention to the insults and the ridicule that they level against people on the right, I think they are correct in the sense that there is kind of a quote-unquote snowflake culture on the right, as much as I hate using that term, but it's not within nationalism or identitarianism. It's more the alt-light or just mainstream conservatives. I mean, they are easily upset as well. I mean, things like, not kneeling, not standing for the national anthem that sends some of these people, up the wall. And I do think that there is a right-wing snowflake culture, for lack of a better term, but I don't think it's really part of the dissident right. I think that's part of, you know, kind of unreflective. I think that's part of the more mainstream right, so to speak.
Conservative ink.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly a part of legacy, because that's all conservatives can do is whine and complain and do absolutely nothing about it.
Yeah.
They never punch back, and that's the reason why we're in the mess that we're in.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of us honestly grew up like in like the decline had already like set in like pretty stoutly, right? So we grew up, you know, with post-apocalyptic fantasies. I mean, just look at the rise of books like McCarthy's The Road and, you know, like The Walking Dead and stuff like that. Like, people just constantly think about everything collapsing and dissolving around them, and they don't do anything to like really fix it. You know, I mean, I was always kind of interested in the concept of like prepping, right? Like all these preppers who would like engage in like putting up stores of vacuum locked food and, you know, getting all these like special like three different flashing pattern flashlights and like tons of guns, but they have no culture. Like, they're not trying to, so like they survive, but they have none of the most human elements. They only keep the most animal elements, which is just mere survival. And it's like, we don't want to throw away everything that we've achieved culturally. That's what a big part of this is refusing to cede ground and refusing to throw away our magnificent cultural achievements.
Yeah, survivalism is definitely a form of white flight. I think as long as it's, when it's on its own and when your only plan or model for fixing modern society is survivalism, then I don't think that is white flight, and I don't think that's very useful. I mean, I understand some people, in addition to perhaps being more involved in the cultural sphere, enjoy, you know, stockpiling food and you know,
I mean, it's awesome. And it's
learning
fun.
Self-sufficiency. Yeah, yeah. I just don't think on its own it really constitutes a plan. But I'm self-reliance is certainly virtuous. But guys, I think we should go ahead and wrap up for our break here. But before we do, Titus, why don't you tell us where people can find Tales of the Trough on the internet?
Certainly. You can find us on the TRS network, and you can also find us on our Spreaker account, and that's www.spreaker.com/user/theovenmen.
All right, hang tight, folks. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.